Welcome back to College Football 134, the Covers Podcast, delving into every inch of college football. This week, that means more than ever, with literally more FBS games this weekend than any other weekend in history. There are 96 games this weekend, including Notre Dame at Texas A&M, USC versus LSU, and North Dakota State at Colorado. I am Douglas Farmer, joined by Andrew Cayley. How are you today, Andrew?
Doing wonderful. We've got 96 games to bet on and cover this week. We talk about covers 134. We should hit a few of them this week, right?
We should. In fact, that is entirely the premise. You know me too well to say that off the top. We are going to discuss those games of the week. We'll discuss them every week. But we will also then get into our best bets. And there's probably usually a theme with me that I find that value elsewhere. Last week, there were only those four games. So we don't need to recap it much, but there was one, you know, our season started with a pretty notable upset, Florida State falling to Georgia Tech. I would say the Yellow Jackets dominated in the trenches on both sides of the ball. Credit to the players 100%. And the coaching staff. Heck of a good game call. It might have been only a 24-21 win, but Georgia Tech had a 97% post-game win expectancy.
I read somewhere there was only 14 drives combined in the entire game. I wonder if the helmet communication system now has something to do with that a little bit as well. I saw both quarterbacks, like, while they weren't pushing the ball crazy downfield, they weren't making a whole lot of bad throws in that football game. But I will agree with you, the most shocking thing that I saw in that game was not something I was going to expect, and that was Florida State got absolutely dominated in the trenches, particularly when Georgia Tech had the ball. Like, it looked like they could just, well, you saw it at the end of the game. They had like 2 8-minute drives, it felt like, and just completely chewed the clock. And yes, that defensive line is very highly touted, but this is one of those transfer portal lines, right? Like, these are all dudes that are playing together, their first game together for the first time. So maybe it's going to take a game or two for them to kind of come together and be that defensive line that everybody was talking about. DJ was fine in his first.
He took a lot of criticism. I thought he was fine. I thought he was DJU. He was who he's always been, and Mike Norvell knew that.
Yeah.
The point you make about the defensive line being a transfer portal, I always harp on you can't transfer portal in an offensive line. I should spend more time harping that. It's hard to do it on a defensive line. And, yeah, Florida State found that success last year. They had two NFL-caliber players on their defensive line through the portal. It's hard to do that year to year, and Georgia Tech made that point. You point out multiple 8-minute drives, only 14 possessions. These are all service academy type numbers. When Notre Dame plays Navy every year, Notre Dame says we're hoping to have 8 offensive possessions, and we're going to get the ball. We're going to take the ball if we win the coin toss, because otherwise we might not see it until there's only 5 minutes left in the first quarter. That's what Georgia Tech did. They treated it like a service academy game, and that's something to remember as we look at Georgia Tech totals moving forward.
Mm-hmm. 100%. Yeah.
Now, before we get to the week at hand, Andrew, producer Mario reminds me to encourage everyone to rate and review the podcast. Ideally, you give us 5 stars, but I won't be offended if you're honest. If watching us on YouTube, like and subscribe to the video. Subscribing is important. You don't want to miss us live Saturday morning at 9 a.m. Eastern time. Before week one kicks off, we'll be sharing all of our final week one thoughts. And if you're not subscribed, you might miss that alert. Speaking of some of those games, there are big games before Saturday. Let's discuss the biggest games of the week. We can get to Coastal Carolina at Jacksonville State later in the show. That's where my heart lies.
I had to talk about Jacksonville State.
But I suspect there are other, like maybe a Thursday game you think deserves game of the week status.
Well, we can start. Maybe I don't think it deserves game of the week status, but certainly some people do. And that is North Dakota State taking on Colorado. That's 8 Eastern time on Thursday on ESPN. I believe the line is now sitting at double digits, Colorado minus 10 with a total of 60.5. The Dion and Colorado hype train continues to chug along despite the team going 1-7 down the stretch last year and looking frankly pretty unbettable at times.
You said it, not me.
Yeah, fair. I did say it. I saw their win total at 5.5 this year, and I saw the under at plus 110. And I can't see 6 wins on the schedule this year. I don't. Like, maybe the transfers that Dion did a great job in the transfer portal, as he does. But this is what we just talked about. Like, will these guys – he did it the year before, too. We got a lot of transfers in the year before. They did not come together. It did not work out for them. Why would I expect that to work out again this year? I just – yes, Shedeur Sanders is back. Yes, Travis Hunter is back. I think they even got, like, one of the top tackle prospects in the recruiting class this year on their own, and I heard that he's going to start at left tackle for them this year, which obviously they need because that offensive line was terrible. But I don't know. I don't see – 6 wins on the schedule, and on top of that, now I say that, I don't have the North Dakota State game circled as one of these obvious losses because it's an FCS team, even though North Dakota State is that FCS team that everybody knows about, 9 natties since 2011. That said, they haven't won one since 2021. They have a new head coach this year. But the offensive coordinator that they have, I mean, their new head coach is their former offensive coordinator for the last 10 years, up until like 2016 or 2017 or something like that. And he ran that power offense, which Colorado also struggled with, power rushing offense, mind you, which Colorado struggled a lot with last season. I think Colorado's talent wins out in the end in this one. But like, if you were gun to my head, I'm going to be taking North Dakota State and those 10 points that you're giving me now. But I feel uncomfortable. It's a very uncomfortable game for betting with me right now. Maybe sprinkle a little North Dakota State money line just in case. But I think Colorado should win. They should, but I'm just not confident either side.
Week one lines move too much. They have been out since early June, and they've taken action increasingly with each month. And by the first week of August, they're set. And that's just a fact of life. It's one of the reasons I counsel. There might be 96 games this weekend. Pick your spots. Be prudent. This is one of those moments where I look at the line move in the last week, and I just want to grab people by their shoulders and yell at them. A week ago Monday, this line was North Dakota State plus 8.5. Nothing has changed between last Monday and today, Tuesday afternoon. And now this line is plus 10. Why? Because the Colorado fascination refuses to shut up. Deion Sanders, what was my line last week? Yeah, he brought in his Louis. What's he carrying on the offensive defensive lines? They're still carrying grocery bags. North Dakota State is a physical team. This line should never have been as high as 8.5, let alone moved to plus 10. For me, this is a number item at this point. And I want to really drive this home. This is now a 10-point spread. If we are covers 134, Bill Connolly over at ESPN goes even further. He establishes a ranking for 700-plus teams, all of college football, all the way down to the NAIA. And now I'm going to pull this up real quick. It's tough to see because there are 700 teams. But you look at column number 2 there. Number 60, Appalachian State. Number 61, Colorado. Number 62, Colorado State. And now this is a 10-point line. North Dakota State. And now this is a 10-point line. This has gotten out of hand. Am I on the plus 10? Yeah, personally. Am I going to advise it out loud? Probably by the end of the week. Because this line has just moved. You know why I'm not advising it right now? Because given the public fascination, we're going to get plus 10.5. We're going to get plus
11. We might.
This is foolish and foolhardy, and I don't want to call people dumb.
Can I throw out a theory? Do you think there is some NCAA 25 effect here? EA posted their rankings of Colorado when this, like 2 months before the game came out, or 6 weeks or something like that. They had Colorado as the 16th best team ratings-wise in the country. And
you know what? That was good marketing. It was stunning. EA Sports. That's good marketing, and it's making sportsbooks some money.
Yeah. Because I have no other explanation. Like, it's like last year all over again. Like, nobody saw what happened last year. Like, it's people forgotten already. It's insanity.
There are 96 games this weekend. You do not need to bet them all. You do not need to bet Colorado, North Dakota State, 8 o'clock Eastern on Thursday at ESPN. I'm going to tell you right now, I'm not going to watch it. I'm going to go to a competitive football game instead of watching the Deion Sanders hype machine. I will be at North Carolina, Minnesota, enjoying the in-person experience and ignoring the hype machine, the EA Sports marketing, and the sportsbook profiting. That said, there are 2 top 20 matchups we have to watch on Saturday. They are our bookends for the majority of the day. We start with Clemson at Georgia at noon Eastern on ABC. Right now, Georgia is a 13.5-point favorite, total of 48.5. And my favorite part about this, I will credit Alex Kirshner of Split Zone Duo for pointing this out. I should make that a one-man screen. If this is readable, 3 years ago, Clemson was -3 against Georgia in the opener. You might remember that game. It ended 10-3. It was exactly one touchdown, a 74-yard interception return for Georgia. Fitting, the season ended with a 79-yard interception return touchdown for Georgia. Now that line is 13.5, 3 years later. This number has moved that far. It really shows the dovetailing of these two programs. Clemson no longer the national title contender by default. Georgia, the front runner every single season. It is very interesting to me that this line has effectively moved 17 points in three seasons.
Yeah, and I'm not on the spread here, but I think your line of thinking is correct here. Like, that was an incredible defensive battle in that game, and I think we're going to have something similar here as well. You look at Dabo's roster this year. Last year, a down year, only 9 wins for them, that had been a down year for them. They've been not playing.
It's like you saying North Dakota State hasn't won a national title since 2021. Those poor people, 9 wins, 3 years without a championship. It's so hard sometimes.
Tough in North Dakota. Where are they from? Fargo, right? It's Fargo.
I don't want to get it wrong. People will yell at me.
I think it's Fargo. You can yell them wrong.
As I'm drinking out of a South Dakota coffee.
Shout out to Fargo, North Dakota. Anyway, yeah, this is a really, really good defensive team that he still continues to recruit really well, despite losing a bunch of guys to the draft last year. This should be arguably the best defense in the ACC once again. On offense, they've got a strong offensive line as well, and they've got Phil Maffa running the football, who I think is better than Shipley was, to be honest. And we can debate that if you want, but like, at least in terms of what you want to do to be effective against Georgia, you want a guy like who is a tank, like Maffa, to grind out drives. And that's exactly what they can do. Well, Georgia, like, what do you want to say about Georgia? We don't have they've got NFL guys everywhere. Like, they do. Carson Beck is one of the Heisman favorites, and he could be one of the top quarterbacks taken in the draft. Like, but they've got NFL guys everywhere. I really like them adding Trevor Etienne as well from Florida. I think he gives them kind of a game breaker back that they've kind of been lacking the last couple of years. And I could see them pounding the rock with him quite a lot as well against this Clemson team. So
you're talking about two rushing attacks and two pretty good defenses. I sense you're going somewhere.
Under in the first half. This is a really under 24.5 in the first half. For me here, I think these are once again two very good coaches who can make adjustments in the second half. So maybe I'll stay away from the full game total a bit there, but really, really like the under 24.5 in the first half here. Yeah, like you said, strong defenses, strong rushing attacks, strong offensive line play. The guys are just going to, it's going to be like I said, it's going to be like that game from a few years ago. That's what I see here.
That may seem like a slow start to our Saturday, and you know, frankly, it will be. If it's a Phil Maffa ETN kind of first half, it will be a slow start. We might have a slower end to Saturday. Texas A&M hosts Notre Dame at 7:30 Eastern on ABC. Notre Dame is now +3, total of 46.5. What do you see there, if anything?
So really, really interesting matchup there. Aggies, like you said, 3-point favorites. I kind of thought Notre Dame was going to be favored when I start thinking about this college football season. I see this matchup on the schedule. I thought this line should kind of be reversed, and Notre Dame was getting 3 points. We're in year three of the Marcus Freeman era here at Notre Dame. They should have one of their best seasons under him. Maybe it might be his most talented roster under him. You can debate that better than me, I think. But Riley Leonard should be very effective for him this season. The schedule lines up very well for Notre Dame as well. So lots of expectations for them. They were one of those odds on favorite teams to make the college football playoff this year. It's also just year one for Mike Elko. And like, while he said that he's going to shorten up that playbook and like kind of let that talent speak for itself at Texas A&M, year one, we still need to see his theories and his coaching in practice there. So two teams, very good. This is a numbers one for me too. I just like getting points with a team that I think might be better in this spot. I know the 12th man is a tough play, Kyle Field, tough place to play, but I do think Notre Dame is better. You're going to tell me to hold off and pump the brakes there a bit. So.
Oh no, I'm rolling my eyes on the 12th man. Now that's going to get me. Part of the reason
that's going to get people yelling at you
is Notre Dame's left tackle, Torres Peck, in preseason practice. And Notre Dame has decided for the third time in Notre Dame history to start a true freshman on the offensive line in the season opener. Anthony Knapp will start at left tackle, and that moved the line, the injury alone moved the line a point toward A&M, moving it from 1.5 to 2.5. Now we're all the way up to 3. I keep looking at this, and I think there is a lot of credit being given to the defenses. Total is at 46.5. They brought in two very good offensive coordinators, Mike Denbrock, LSU to Notre Dame, Colin Klein, Kansas State to Texas A&M. Let's give a little bit of credit to those two. Let's notice that they're going to have better quarterback play. Riley Leonard, Duke transfer to Notre Dame. Connor Wegman might stay healthy this year for A&M. I start to look at those offenses, and I think there's going to be something there. There's going to be a lot of work. These defenses are very good, very good. But the offensive coordinators have had time to scheme up their blocking plans, figure out which times they need to hold a tight end in to provide pass coverage. I'm looking at that total, and honestly, I'm sitting here hoping the hype gets a little louder during the week and maybe it gets bet down a bit and I can get an even better number. That's my biggest thought on that game right now. I will say I'm not sure starting a true freshman at left tackle is a bad sign. They had a conservative option. They had a fifth-year senior in Tosh Baker. They could have started there, said, hey, we trust Tosh. He's been to not do that. To me, says there must be some faith in Anthony Knapp. Joe Rudolph, the Notre Dame offensive line coach, has been recruiting him for 3 years when Joe Rudolph was at Virginia Tech. Clearly, he likes something in that evaluation. Does it pan out? We'll see. It might explode in their face. A&M's maybe best position group is his defensive line. That is something to watch, and frankly, for A&M's take, it will inform as we look at their SEC play. Speaking of the SEC, Sunday night, USC versus LSU in Vegas, 7:30 Eastern time on ABC. The last two Heisman winners are gone. Enter Grant Nussmeier at LSU and Miller Moss at USC. And to me, the edge goes to Grant Nussmeier. USC senior quarterback Miller Moss has 92 passes in 12 games in his career. 372 yards and 6 touchdowns came in the bowl game win against a wildly depleted Louisville. Remove those, and Miller Moss has 542 yards and 3 passing touchdowns in his career. I'm not sold on him. He might succeed in the end, but right now I'm not there. You add my lack of confidence in a quarterback to USC's defense, remaining USC's defense. I'm leaning a very clear direction based on those two facts alone.
Yeah, I hate agreeing with you, but that's where we're at in this one. A few things that are making me agree with you here. You hit it. I'm a believer in Nussmeier as well, especially because I think he's playing behind one of the best offensive lines in the country this year. And like you said, I'm not a believer in Miller at this point. And then there's that defense. They did bring in the UCLA defensive coordinator, D'Anton Lynn. But this is a USC team that's had talent for years on the defensive side of the ball, and they haven't executed on that talent. They ranked 112th in defensive success rate last year. And last but not least for me anyway, is I just don't believe that Lincoln Riley is a very good in-game coach. Like, we talked about this. Like, he is great with quarterbacks. You want a Heisman-winning quarterback, you go to USC, you work with Lincoln Riley. But when it comes to actual in-game management, he's just, I don't know, he's not the guy for me. I prefer to have Brian Kelly in these situations. I think he will have the edge in coaching, and I think they just have the edge in talent here. I think this line should be closer to 6.5, so I'll happily take LSU -4.5 against USC this weekend.
That is a number, again, it's you're getting a good number at the end of summer, and I'm happy for you. It will be, man, Sunday night, they're like, I get tired of some of these neutral site games to start the season. Let's go back to, like, Clemson at Georgia would have been more fun.
Yeah.
This one, I don't care where it is. It's going to be fun. And in Vegas, like, this one is going to be one of the more entertaining games. I'm not sure I'll have money on it at all. But close listeners will notice we haven't suggested bets on all of these biggest games. Andrew has placed 2. The Clemson-Georgia first half under 24.5. And LSU -4.5. I have a lean on Notre Dame. I'm not there yet. The biggest games don't necessarily provide the biggest value. Gambling on college football needs to focus on finding value. I failed at finding that value here last week. 0-3, -3.3 units. You better? 2-3.
Kind of. We lost. We both lost.
Units.
Yeah.
And Andrew, I could sit here and say Montana State lost against the spread because of fumble luck, but instead, you won bets last week. Do you want to start us off with a week one best bet and fix this sinking ship?
I won bets, but like I was so confident in Southern Methodist minus 21 earlier in the year. Like I was like, I'm not going to bet the minus 27, but like minus 24 is probably still a good number, and it was not a good number. That said, we are going to dive into a crazy little game here to start, but I'm going to look at Miami, Ohio taking on Northwestern for my first bet of the week. And this is exactly why you say everyone needs to watch this show early in the week and not just jump on Saturday before kickoff. This line, the total opened at 42. It's already down to 40, and I'm seeing some 39 and a halves on the board, but I'm taking under 40 in this matchup. Northwestern obviously surprised everyone last year with their 8-win season. But with the new additions to the Big Ten this year, they could still kind of like regress to the mean a little bit, I think, and end up in the bottom half of the conference once again. But I wouldn't say it's because of their defense. They returned 8 players to a unit that allowed just 22.5 points per game last season. Meanwhile, Miami is one of the top teams in the MAC, but they still like the MAC. Their offense averaged 25.6 points per game, and that's coming against MAC teams mostly. The offense was a bigger problem for the Wildcats last year, and they enter this game with a new quarterback, a new offensive coordinator. So I definitely could see some growing pains in this one against a good MAC defense, which and they're not good for a MAC defense. Miami's a pretty good defense overall, I would say, and I think they're going to be really hard hitting and very good. So this, we talked about Army Navy games. This is not an Army Navy game, but there's going to be a lot of running the football and a lot of clock chewing in this one. So I like under 40 in this matchup.
I like anytime we are taking a low scoring MAC game. So I'm going to tail you in that respect. Ooh. And take a low scoring MAC thought, by which I mean Eastern Michigan is going to UMass, which I know that's not going to do a lot for the search engines, but it does a lot for my joy of just low level, high level college football. This line is going against me. Earlier in the week, I took plus 1.5. I am now taking plus 122. Eastern Michigan on the money line. The spread is up around the field goal. I don't understand it. Are people buying in on UMass? Yes. The Minutemen should be improved from last season, but that's what? Stepping over a broken bar? It's not that complicated. The least bad part of UMass was its rushing game. Lost its leading rusher to Michigan State. Returns only 2 starting offensive linemen. Plus, all aspects of Eastern Michigan's defense were above average a year ago. They returned 4 starters among the front 7. That's going to cause worry for UMass. And I haven't even said my favorite piece of this. Chris Creighton as an underdog, he's the most underappreciated coach in the country. In the last 3 seasons, as an underdog, Eastern Michigan has gone 14-9 against the spread, 10-12 outright. Now, they're only a slim underdog here, so the plus 122 might not excite you. But I don't care. It's value to me. This line keeps moving. I am dug in only further on the money line. You can draw my attention to the under 49.5, neg 104 at FanDuel, partly because of the key number. You know what? I'm adding that. I'm taking under 49.5, neg 104 at FanDuel because I can get that key number right now, and it coincides with my money line pick here. Chris Creighton's preference, Eastern Michigan's strength, I'll take it. Let's add in that bet right now. Put it on my record.
I love it. I love it. I can't. So there's even a MAC connection to my final play but this is also a rollover of something we talked about in our first episode here. Indiana, whose quarterback Curtis Rourke spent his career in the MAC at Ohio. He is now at Indiana and he will be Kurt Cignetti's new starting quarterback. And I think this offense is going to be much improved with him. He threw for 7,600 yards, 50 touchdowns in his career so far. We saw what Jordan McLeod did at James Madison last year. And I think Curtis Rourke is a better quarterback than Jordan McLeod is at this point. And if we're going to see what this Indiana offense is capable of, we're going to see it in this matchup against Florida International. I'm taking Indiana over their team total in this one of 37.5. Actually, I think Florida International will be an improved team in CUSA this season, but I don't know if they have the tools to slow down this Indiana passing attack. They ranked 100th in the country in opponent yards per pass attempt last year. That Indiana wide receiver room is also sneaky good, which includes former Duke's wide receiver Eli Surratt, who had over 12 or nearly 1,200 yards last season. This FIU defense also allowed 38 plus points six times last season. And I think this is a really good spot for Indiana's offense to get rolling. Over 37.5 for me here. Really like this play.
You know, throughout the summer, I take literal physical notes. I'm old school like that. Notepad, legal pads all over the place. One of my literal summer notes was Indiana, opponent team total unders in September. Now, that's not what you've done here. But if I'm saying FIU is going to struggle to score, FIU is going to struggle to keep the ball, that does bode well for the Hoosiers offense. So it's a bit of a tandem piece there. Obviously, that combination is going to have me look at the Indiana spread. I will probably do it as soon as we get off air here, and then I'm going to drive to Iowa.
Bets.
I'm not exaggerating. Another note on my sheet here was Houston early team total unders. I keep looking at this Houston offense. The problem isn't that they lost a lot, which they did. They returned only four starters. The problem is they're taking that roster, the remnants of that roster, and now trying to run a Willie Fritz offense. Willie Fritz runs the ball. Even if it's not working, he runs the ball. Tulane did not have a potent run game last year. Willie Fritz ran the ball. Houston's going to struggle offensively with that reality. Now they face UNLV, who returns seven defensive starters, including its stars. It might be good enough to bother Houston in this transition. In fact, not might be, should be. And now I add in UNLV's go-go offense, led by receivers Ricky White III and Jacob DeJesus. Quarterback is a question. They have three players listed as the starter, multiple ORs this week. But to me, that might just mean they have three chances to get it right. And if one of them clicks, taking UNLV at plus 118 this week should become a profit. This line has fallen throughout the summer from plus 3.5 in the spread all the way to plus 1.5 a week ago. And now what has it done in the last week? Climbed back up to plus 2.5. And like I said earlier in the show with North Dakota State, what changed between last week and now? Nothing. Nothing changed. This line should never have risen. Looking at that, the money line should never have risen. I am getting value in that plus 118. It is mostly fading Houston's offense. You cannot have a failing offense against the go-go offense. So I'm going to take that. I'm going to enjoy it. And then, Andrew, I'm a man of my word. If you heard earlier in the show, I said we get to Jacksonville State in Coastal Carolina by the end of the show. I would never, never say that and then not get to it. Jacksonville State by 2.5. That's a Thursday game. I probably should have made it my first bet. That is me showing that it's still August. Why did I pick Jacksonville State at plus 750 to win CUSA? Because I trust Rich Rodriguez to run the ball against lousy rush defenses. Guess who has a lousy rush defense? I'm going to give you one guess. Coastal Carolina, ranked number 101 in EPA per rush against last season. EPA being expected points added on a given snap. You look at game state. To a Parker Fleming who's going to be on in a few minutes. It's his specialty, calculating EPA. The point being, if you ran the ball against Coastal Carolina, you improved your offensive standing. Now Coastal Carolina has to replace his three leading tacklers. The defensive front needs help. Going against an offense that returns Logan Smothers at running back and brings in UConn transfer Zion Turner, a speedy worry for teams like Coastal Carolina. This is a matchup-based bet that should underscore how little the 2.5 matters to me. I would take this to neg 3. I want to say I'd take it past it, but that would be bad process. Key numbers matter, so I'm not saying that. That just shows you that I do feel that strongly in this number being wrong. Jacksonville State, neg 2.5, is my final best bet of the weekend.
Look at that. Jacksonville State, Indiana team totals, Eastern Michigan, Miami of Ohio. Man, what a slate.
Covers 134 for a reason. And right. Now we're going to bring on, as promised, Parker Fleming at StatsOWAR on Twitter. He is currently hoarding all of his smart numbers to make the rest of us look foolish. But maybe we can get one or two out of him right now. Parker, how are you today?
I'm doing great, man. I tried to step into the frame and stepped out of the frame. How are y'all doing? I had the first BetUS show. We're doing two shows a week now. So I've been talking for, an hour and a half. We're locked in. We got a full slate of games. It's a lot of fun.
There are more games this weekend than ever before. I don't know if we can do enough shows to get through 96 games.
It's a lot of games.
I couldn't do it. I couldn't hang. I only have a couple of picks here. I heard some of what you guys were saying and like some of those. I'm on Jacksonville State for against Coastal. You can get 2.5 if you're sharp out there, and you made some good points there. Well, the only thing I'll point out about that, Douglas, before we get to two picks of mine that I really like, the starting tackle Jacksonville State is Cam Jones. So Clay Webb is like an NFL guy. You're going to hear that name down the stretch. He's really, really good. But their tackle is Cam Jones. Cam Jones was recruited to Cincinnati as a quarterback, and he is now a 6'8", 308-pound starting tackle at the FBS level.
I hear jealousy. I hear envy at somebody's ability to hold muscle mass. That's all I hear right now out of you.
That's amazingly impressive. Like, just an absolute athlete there. So just have to mention that. A couple of things that I like, varying degrees of on the radar. I don't even talk about James Madison because that's going to get steamed like crazy because they just don't have players.
Let's give the viewers the note there. Charlotte head coach Biff Pogge. Yes, his name is Biff Pogge. Today, Tuesday, said they are down 8 or 9 starters from training camp. And that line immediately started moving up from James Madison favored by 6. I don't know how high it's already gotten. I know I saw before we went on air 8.5s and 9s.
Ooh. Yeah. Yeah, it's all over the place. So not a lot of value there. I do still like, I think you get Sam Houston plus double digits against Rice. That's one that I like a little bit. I think Sam Houston last season left a lot a lot in the tank at the beginning of the season, just trying to survive and stay healthy with the jump. They should be much better. I think they have a coaching advantage here. I think they'll have a little bit better play replacing quarterback and running back. Frankly, Rice's offense last season, I mean, super high volume, and I'm not sure that EJ Warner inspires me there at all. So I like Sam Houston to keep that one close.
I do see plus 10 neg 108 at DraftKings as of Tuesday afternoon.
Love that. You can still wildly available. So yeah, Rice has a lot of returning production, but I think Sam Houston State should be better than last year. So I'm going to go with the coaching advantage and Sam Houston having a full off season in the FBS, which they've never done before. So that's one that I liked a good bit. The other one is, and I don't know, have you guys talked Penn State, West Virginia yet?
We haven't. I also have the notebook here, and it West Virginia plus 8.5 is circled in my notebook, but then I got a bird in my ear telling me that you might be wanting to talk about it. So I'll let you do it.
Oh, I love that. I love that. Well, no, I'd love to hear your reasons too. I'm actually on Penn State there. I have that mocked by my numbers very close to that line. And I like Penn State as a favorite here. I think the big thing for me is looking at Drew Aller in 2023, 9.4% of his passes were 20 plus yards downfield, 42% were 0 to 9 yards. Only 25% of his passes were play action. Kansas quarterbacks last year, 39.1% play action, 15% of his passes, 20 plus yards downfield. And so I do think that they are going to have an offense that is going to function downfield. They basically outclassed everyone on the regular season schedule last year without a functioning downfield offense. And so I think Kotelnicki brings that in. He's got a talent advantage for the first time in his career. That's going to be a whole lot of fun. And then West Virginia last season, you know, won a couple close games that didn't have much to do with the offense. Was it a coincidence that Green's second lowest yards per attempt and fewest rushing yards came against Penn State last year? No, I don't think so. Is it a coincidence that his pressure to sack ratio on the season was 5.5%, but against Penn State, it was 16.7%? No, I don't think that's a coincidence. Abdul Carter's not going anywhere. I think that Penn State's defense is going to give West Virginia's offense all sorts of hell. So I'm in on Penn State as a favorite there.
I had it the other way. Just my biggest question, you kind of just put my argument in the toilet there. Drew Aller was the biggest question mark for me, like you said, not being able to push the ball down the field. It will be interesting to see if they don't need that against West Virginia in this matchup in Morgantown. But Aller was my biggest question mark.
There is a question of how much is James Franklin going to let Andy Kotelnicki cook with the offense. James Franklin has long struggled with that. It seems to be a Pennsylvania problem. Pat Narduzzi has the same problem when he brings in an innovative offensive coordinator and then hamstrings him. You have to hope James Franklin lets Andy Kotelnicki do what made Kansas rise so quickly.
Yeah, and you've got to think that you don't bring in a guy like that without having those conversations. I mean, they brought in Yurchik, they brought in Soroka. Both of them they brought in with concerns about would the personnel fit the right way. And so you have to wonder if they're saying like, all right, they literally got asked questions last year about the downfield offense. They know in the 12-team playoff, they're going to have to actually show up and go pound for pound with a team like Ole Miss if they want to stay at the same level. Like Penn State going one and done in the playoff is a bad season for them going forward, right? And so they've got to adapt because they're going to have another nationally competitive game that they've got to win if they want to even take a lateral move, let alone ascend to be kind of the next level there.
And you have me looking for my mocked playoff bracket. They would be going to Oregon in my mock playoff bracket in the first round of the playoff. I don't like Penn State's chances of not doing one and done in the playoff in that scenario.
There will be teams that get a better draw. There will be teams that get a better draw than going to Eugene. Should be a fun trip for them, though. Always a nice stadium, you know?
I don't think anybody's going into the playoff thinking, oh, man, I really get to go to Watson. This is great.
Dude, I wonder how many – you're like pull up on your phone and be like, dude, I could have gone to the Bahamas Bowl in Myrtle Beach. Damn it. Come on, Charlotte or whatever they have it. Other one I liked was TCU Stanford under. That's moved quite a bit. I don't know if you guys have seen that one. I think it was 60 at BetUS this morning when we did the show. I have that
still
one.
Still 60 is available.
At about 58. I know it was 61 like last week and then went down a little bit, but it's back up. Stanford was 71st in plays per minute last year, and TCU just couldn't score a touchdown to save their lives. They were, you know, constantly kicking field goals. Maybe the addition of Drake Dabney for TCU helps with the red zone issues, but also, honestly, like, they had Jared Wiley last year, so it's not like there was an issue of talent at the tight end position that was limiting them. Overall, Stanford was super scramble heavy. They were 6th in percent of total offense that came from scrambles. And so I think even as they were super pass heavy, they were very, very slow. And they scrambled a lot more than they wanted to. They want to have that dropback passing game. So I want to see how that does. They were 126 in points per echo. So, again, not a lot of finishing drives well. I think we could see some field goals in that game and some pace issues. So a rare total for me, but I like TCU Stanford under 60.
Earlier today, I mentioned to Andrew that I'm hoping the public keeps pushing that number up a little bit. I would love to see a plus 10 by Saturday, and I would jump on Stanford at plus 10. It's at 9 or 9.5 right now. I'm not saying I don't like 9 or 9.5. I'm just hoping to see the public bring in a little bit more. You saying that's an under game. Usually I like a double-digit underdog in an under, but Troy Taylor is such an offensive mind. You've got me a little conflicted on that front.
Yeah, I mean, I think TCU should be able to handle them well. But I just don't know how much TCU is going to be able to separate. 9.5, 9 is always a number. Like I'll rarely play one of those for whatever reason. That I think I'll use some parlance of the kids these days. A 9.5 line gives me the ick. I'm not gonna bet that. It's not gonna
Parker,
happen.
You're too old to be. We're the same age. You're too old to be saying the word ick.
Or Riz. They don't have the Riz required.
Yeah, for real. Just I can't even keep up with that one.
But yeah, you two walked me right into this. Same things the kids say. Parker, do you have a Colorado, North Dakota State thought for us as that number is at 10? You don't have to worry about the ick of 9.5.
Yeah, I think I would lean Colorado or nothing there because North Dakota State safety is out too. And like how many teams in the FBS could line up against Travis Hunter one-on-one and like deny him? I don't know that anybody in the FCS can do that. So I think that one will be interesting and close early because North Dakota State will keep pace down and run against a front that's not great. But I think Colorado can just score. I mean, they can just score against this defense.
I know how to.
You're nervous now.
I know how to slow down Travis Hunter. Don't let Shedeur Sanders get rid of the ball. How do you make sure Shedeur Sanders does not get rid of the ball? You blitz through a problematic offensive line. There, solve it.
And North Dakota State was like top 10 in sacks last year for FCS. I was looking that up earlier. And I mean, Shedeur Sanders doesn't do well with pressure. So there's a clear blueprint there.
I appreciate that. So your two strongest plays were Sam Houston State.
And Sam Houston State plus 10 and Penn State minus 8.5.
I love to hear it. We appreciate you popping in for a little bit. Less chaos this week, but next week you'll have more than 4 games to react to. So I'm sure you will have something there to bother my mind.
Oh, I'll be thinking about it all weekend while I'm watching football. Always good to chat with you guys.
Thanks, Parker. Take care.
Thanks, Parker.
And that should about do it for us, Andrew. Am I missing anything?
Sounds good to me. Another bunch of teams covered, which is great. We heard Sam Houston State in there too. Now that's another team.
Right. Our coworker has challenged us to actually live up to the name and discuss all 134 teams this season. To which I told Jared, that's make it hard for me. This is child's play. We will discuss more of them Saturday morning, 9 a.m. Eastern, live. Before we get out of here, we need to remind folks to like, review, subscribe, so you get the alert when we go live Saturday morning. And to have more fun, I encourage you to remind Andrew on Twitter that I went 0-3. Go and tell him that I went 0-3. Your feedback will only point us in better directions. He's Andrew Cayley, @covers_Cayley. I am Douglas Farmer, D_Farmer. We'll see you Saturday morning live at 9 a.m. Eastern.
Can't wait.